right, please be seated. This morning we have Northlake School with us. If you could please stand up and we could say hello to you. Wow, big group. Nice. It's nice to have you here. I mean, what else are you going to do on a big rainy day like this? So good to have you here. Hopefully you enjoy your time at the Capitol. It's an amazing place. So thanks for coming. Go ahead and have a seat. Calling 19 AP 1319, Milwaukee Police Supervisors Organization versus City of Milwaukee. Could I please have your appearances? As I understand it, you have split your initial oral argument 10 minutes and 15 minutes. Then you have 30 minutes for your presentation, then 5 minutes for your presentation, right? Okay, good. With that, let's proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Chris McGillis. This is my partner, Sean Lees of McGillis Weimer LLC. We represent the Milwaukee Professional Firefighters Association and the 21 individually named retired firefighters. We respectfully request that this court reverse the Court of Appeals for three reasons. As Chief Justice noted, I have 10 minutes of time. I'm going to focus solely, at least try to focus solely on the first issue, which is the plain language of the party's collective bargaining agreement. I think there's two really key critical facts that I want to point out because, in my opinion, the Court of Appeals glossed over those facts, and the city doesn't take those on in their brief. And the first one, and they're within the confines of this plain language, the first one is that all of the individually named plaintiffs in this case, the 21 firefighters, all of them were hired prior to October 3rd, 2011. The second fact is that every single one of them made a contribution towards the pension under the language. Every single one of them. And those two facts are critical because what we have here is we have a group of people, all of which that were hurt at work permanently, not able to do their job as a firefighter, and are on what we call duty disability retirement. But reality is that group, let's call it between 150 and 200 people historically since this system has been created. Of those, the mass group, the big circle, the 21 that are named here, they are a little bit different. And the reason why I point that out is because, again, every single one of them paid in towards the pension system. They paid in the percentage and got some in return. That's different than somebody that, for example, retired under duty disability in 2008. Right? This language that you are interpreting is language that came about because of Act 10 and 32. There was change in our pension laws as to who is required as a public safety employee, who is required to make a contribution. The legislature drew a line in the sand and said, hey, October of 2011, everyone moving forward, it's mandatory. No more bargaining collectively amongst the police and fire unions and the employer. They have to pay in. Why I bring those two facts up is because the Court of Appeal glosses over that. The trial court found in our favor. They said the big pie, every single one of them, based on the plain language, is entitled to the contribution being included in their disability amount. We won on the big pie. The Court of Appeals said, no. No one in that pie gets anything. And the court also made their analysis on the plain language. But what the court did and what the city overlooks, and I don't want to use the word misrepresents, but let's certainly say misstates, is we have this group of 21 named people that paid in. So we look at Article 10. That's really what the language that we're talking about. There's two main parts of it. There's what we're calling this conditional language. And I'm paraphrasing here, but the notion is you have to pay, if you pay in.
Counsel, before we get into
Yes.
That part. I looked at stipulation facts number 14.
Yes.
That you both agreed to. And it basically said each individually named plaintiff in this lawsuit made the 3.5% and or combined 7% pension contribution as described in paragraph 13, and that's 13 above in this same document, as a deduction from payroll while still in active city service or, if already on DDR at the time of the 2013 through 16 CBA, was executed as a deduction from retroactive wages received pursuant to the terms of the 2013-16 CBA. So it seems to me the city agrees with what you just told us.
Yes.
That each of the plaintiffs were before the date that was really controlling, and that each of them made the payments. And from the briefing, although I didn't, it may be in the stipulated facts, I just didn't circle it. In the briefing, it said the city is trying to recoup the monies that some of these firefighters paid, believing that that's what they should be doing. Now the city is trying to recoup the 5.8%. Is that ongoing, or how did they try to recoup it? Just take it out of their salary? How did that happen?
Well, so they're not including the percentage in the total amount to calculate their duty disability retirement pension.
Okay.
They're not including that. And so where I'm going to quote
it. Well, it doesn't fit within the grid if you don't include it, because the grid has got it included every single year.
Yes.
Right, if you're talking about the firefighters we're talking about here.
Yes, the grid includes, and that's, again, part of when we talk about the second part of the base building and pensionable language in that plain language.
Right.
So the grid includes, so the 5.8, mm-hmm. 7%, that's included in the grid.
Mm-hmm.
That was included by the city. In fact, the director, you know, his client, we took his deposition, he called it a ministerial duty, as if this wasn't even something we had to think about. He started to do that on his own as the head of the pension group. The only reason why he stopped is because the city attorney drafted a letter and said, hey, you can't do that anymore. And the thing, so you were quoting, and I had it marked down, the appendix.
It's paragraph 14 of
yes,
the
ma'am.
Stipulation
exactly.
of facts.
And so here's, like, so I'm quoting off page 25 of the city's brief. This is the sentence in context of this conditional language. Right, quoting page 25. While DDR recipients hired prior to October 3rd, 2011 certainly satisfy the first eligibility criteria, and here it's italics, none of them make the 7% member contribution.
Well, that's contrary to the stipulation.
That's just wrong. See, and I don't want to use the word misrepresents, misstates, but that statement in this brief is unequivocally stipulated is wrong. And the reason why it's a big deal is because what we know and what's also stipulated is that when the member retires under what they call the normal service pension, so if you're not hurt, if you just put your time in like a great civil servant, you run out your career, the amount, the percentage is included. And that's the second part, the base building and pensionable. Everyone agrees it's base building and pensionable. Meaning you run out your entire career, you do all the things you're supposed to do, you're a great civil servant, it's included. Now, what they want to do is say, well, but hold on, it's different if you get hurt at work because that's duty disability retirement.
Counsel, I have a question.
Yes.
If your clients in this case went back to work, would they be required to pay in? If they were,
oh, yes.
Went,
yeah. Yes.
Is there anything in the record that reflects, you know, ability to opt out, or would that just be they would have to continue paying?
There's some, and I don't want to misrepresent or misstate.
Sure. Yeah.
I've never heard of somebody being in not contributing, right? Not yeah. wanting to be in the pension system. My experience is I deal with police and firefighters all over the state of Wisconsin. I mean, your pension's your most valuable asset you have when you're out. And so I think there could be, based on some nuances in the city's charter, but it's not something, practically speaking, that I've really had any experience with.
Follow up, were there Were there firefighters before October 2011 that didn't pay in? And your clients are just the ones that did pay in? In other words, I want to understand the significance legally in our interpretation of the contract for the point you're making that they did make those prior contributions.
Yes, it's a very good point. So, yes, there were people that retired. Again, somebody was hurt on the job 2008 before anything with Act 10 and 32 were legally required. People hired after that date to pay in. There was people that went out on duty disability in the city of Milwaukee that never made the contribution. And Attorney Lees is going to specifically talk to you about why they still win. It's the rationale of the circuit court based on the plain language, just like Judge Conan found and what he held. But the key distinction is where the city's argument literally, and these are my words and I don't mean to be over, like gets blown out of the water, is their whole notion is, well, like I read you, they're not eligible because they didn't pay in. Well, we know as a matter of fact, stipulated, that these 21 paid in. So then we move to the second part of the thing, which is, what does it mean to be pensionable in base building? Right? And what they say, where they try to draw the distinction is, they try to say, well, there's a definition for normal service, right? If you do your just normal time, you're not hurt. The word is final average salary. Okay, there's a definition of that. And then they say, well, there's a difference with duty disability. It's current annual salary, which is not defined in the CBA. But what it does say in the city charter is it's defined as amount equal to 75% of the current annual salary for position which he held at the time of such injury. And so why that's so critical is the 21 named, again, the court has the big, I'm sorry, my time.
Go ahead and finish your sentence.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're done.
There's the big pie, but at the same time, for the ones that paid in, okay, when they were injured, their salary was with the amount already in. It's not disputed. And that's huge. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Sean Lees of McGill Swimmer, and I also represent Local 215 in this matter. So I would like to touch upon the plain language analysis to continue that argument, because that is our primary argument in this case, is that the plain language of this contract, which was negotiated at arm's length at the bargaining table, passing proposals back and forth, shows that the 5.8% wage increase must be included in the pensionable DDR benefits. So really the issue, a way to think about this issue, is how do we treat the 5.8% wage increase for formerly active employees who it was stipulated to did make the pension contribution, did receive the 5.8%, and then transition to duty disability retirees who are receiving pension benefits. So that's what undercuts the city's analysis regarding this eligibility issue. They were all hired prior to October 3rd, 2011. Excuse me. They all made the pension contribution. So once they transition to pension retirees, that last sentence in Article 10C, that's what's critical. And so our analysis reads the plain language of the contract as a whole, which the circuit court correctly did. Because when we look at, well, what does pensionable mean? Article 23 of the contract defines pension benefits as any benefits that are listed under the Milwaukee City Charter, Section 36. And I paraphrase that, but I think it's undisputed. Both normal service retirement benefits and duty disability retirement benefits are both included under Milwaukee City Charter, Section 36.
Counsel, can I interrupt you just for a minute? I think the facts, at least, are very important to me in this case. And paragraph 19, again, the stipulation of facts, says all collective bargaining agreements prior to the 2013-2016 CBA also contain salary grids showing the calculation of salary for all covered positions. Were those grids inclusive before this new CBA, inclusive of wage increases such as the 5.8%?
So the 5.8% is new within
this. It's just for this CBA.
Correct.
I get it.
However,
but were there other wage increases that were
correct. So
always included?
So every during the bargaining process, right. the union and the city, they negotiate wage increases. And so that's where the past practice comes into play, because we're looking at the salary grids. Each contract, the salary grids are the foundation of DDR, because they establish those wage increases that are applicable to actives that then carry over to the DDR pension benefits.
Okay, so just say that the CBA before the 2013-2016 one had a 5% increase. Would that have been included in each level of the salary grid for that CBA?
Yes, absolutely. And so in this case, there is the delineation between pre-October 3rd, 2011 hires and post. And that is new in the 2013-2016 CBA. But right. what's important is that carryover of that past practice mm-hmm. is that we still have the salary grid structure, because current annual salary is not defined in the contract or in the Milwaukee City Charter. So we have to come up with a practical way. How do we calculate their salary? It's the salary grids that are applicable to their position at the time they suffer the disabling injury. And so the city's perspective is that, well, there's a distinction between normal service and duty disability retirement. That's inherent to the contract. And I think that the key word is inherent or implied, because the contract does not distinguish, for purposes of Article 10C and the 5.8, between normal service and duty disability retirement. It says they are generally pensionable if they're listed under Section 36.
Counsel, I asked your co-counsel this question, and I just don't have it straight in my mind, so I want to give you an opportunity to help me understand if you had a client or clients here who did not pay. Would your analysis be different? I'm trying to figure out how that fact helps me read the contract.
So if they did not pay, I mean, the pre-October 3rd, 2011 salary grid incorporates the 5.8. If they were hired before October 3rd and they didn't make it as an active employee, then those active employees, they would not have in turn received the 5.8%. So, but based on the past practice of retirees who retired before this contribution came into effect, the past practice is their base salary is based on the salary grid. And so the delineation is between that hired date, and that's the distinction. So if someone's hired prior to October 3rd, 2011, our position is they would fall into the pre-October 3rd, 2011 salary grid. And what the city has done is they're disregarding that clear delineation of the hired date in the contract. So clearly, the 5.8% applies to those who are hired prior to October 3rd, 2011. The city says, okay, great, you were hired prior to October 3rd, 2011. The contract says this is the grid you fall under. But only for purposes of the DDR analysis, we don't care about that. We're going to swap you into the post-October 3rd, 2011 hire grid, which is a base salary those employees never received. And so that explicitly undercuts the base building nature, because they're getting a new base pay that they, again, never received, and it's undercutting their pension benefits, which we think they have a vested right to the highest level of pension benefits negotiated in the contract, and the contract dictates those pension benefits through their base salary in the salary grids.
The only difference between those grids, the pre-2011 and the post, is the 5.8, correct?
Correct, yes.
Which portion of the CBA, explicitly incorporate the salary grid, or does it not? Or why do you look? Yeah, what's the textual connection?
So this is a kind of a unique situation, and we're dealing with public sector collectively bargained contracts. And so the contract dictates the relationship between the parties, but we need to read the contract in the context of the Milwaukee City Charter. So there is no definition, so we just look to the salary grid, because that's really the practical, reasonable way to establish that, because there's nothing else in the contract. I know the city says otherwise, but at the end of the day, the grids establish the base salary for everything other than, according to the city, the DDR calculation.
And where is the grid located?
I'm sorry?
Where is the grid
located? Oh, it is located in Article 10. It's in Article 10C, and so that's if you refer to the stipulation of facts, I believe it gives the actual page numbers. And so you'll see there's a pre-October 3rd, 2011 salary grid.
Is it attached to the, I think maybe this is what you're asking.
Yes, it is.
I think he's not asking, like, where is it?
Oh, no, it is.
But
Article,
where is it?
Article 10's labeled base salary. It's right in there.
It's
within Article 10, correct.
When was this contract negotiated?
So this was the 2013-2016 bargaining agreement. With regards to the dates, there may have been some carryover based on the nature of a contract lapses and then it's executed.
As I understand it, this payment was being made, and this calculation, as you would like it, was being made and viewed as even perhaps ministerial until the city attorney sent a letter saying to discontinue the practice.
Right.
When was that letter sent vis-a-vis the negotiation of this contract?
So that was, the MPSO was also in the case. They were actually receiving the 5.8%. Then the opinion letter came out, and so they, before, I believe, the final execution of the bargaining, or, I'm sorry, it was after the fact. The attorney, I don't know the exact date of the timeline, but to the best of my knowledge.
In other words, that was the lay of the land, that was your understanding of how things worked. After you negotiate the contract, then they
Correct.
Decide to change a common longstanding
Correct.
Practice.
Correct. Yes, and I apologize for my confusion on that point. And so, and that's
I was
what,
just trying to figure out, you know, if you
yeah.
knew it wasn't there, you might be negotiating that in the contract.
Yeah, and that gets us to, and I believe that ties into the extrinsic analysis because we're looking at bargaining history and the past practice. And so during the trial court proceedings, we deposed both the lead negotiator, Ms. Deborah Ford for the City of Milwaukee, and Bernard Allen, who's the executive director of ERS. It's undisputed that no party intended to exclude this language, the 5.8%, from the DDR calculation. And in fact, it's not disputed that conversation never came up, excuse me. So when the lead negotiator for the City of Milwaukee says, when we ask her during deposition, can you circle where there's language that excludes the 5.8% from the DDR, Ms. Ford was unable to do so because that language does not exist. There's no language that undercuts the pensionable nature of the 5.8% that, per the plain reading of the contract, which defines pension benefits, must be incorporated into the duty disability retirement benefits.
So does that existing practice between these parties bear in or have any bearing on how we view this contract and the language?
If the court deems that the language is ambiguous, then we would look to past practice. Am I understanding your question correctly?
Yes.
Yeah, and so it's our position that the plain language, because there could have been a footnote in the post-October 3rd, 2011 salary grid that says, for everything else other than DDR, we're going to use this salary grid. That language, it does not exist. And so the city needs to not only disregard the delineation of the October 3rd, 2011 hire dates, but, I mean, as I'm sure the city will get into, they need to read language into the contract distinguishing normal service and duty disability retirements when the contract just says, hey, this 5.8 is pensionable. And so if DDR is a pension benefit, which it undisputably is, the 5.8% must be incorporated into the DDR calculation.
Counsel, the Court of Appeals, I think, made great moment of the language in the CBA that states the following. The pension offset payment to the employee will continue to be made as long as the employee makes the member contribution. If the employee does not make the member contribution, the 5.8 pension offset and 2016 offset payment will no longer be paid to the employee. Stipulated fact number 44 indicates when a member retires and receives their normal service pension benefit, the member cannot make the 7% member contribution. I think that's based on G, which has that language, if you know what I'm referring to. So how do you reconcile this?
Well, I think a very important fact to consider is that the city gives the 5.8% to normal service retirees. and it's also stipulated that they cannot make the member contribution. So that cuts against the eligibility requirement. Now, there could be so this is a contract negotiated between the parties. The Local 215, for example, does not dictate ERS rules or Milwaukee City ordinances. So, I mean, under circumstances in which there is, like, an opt-out provision or, like, there is a flux of people who are opting out based on some changes under policy or whatnot, all this language says is, like, hey, while you're an active employee, you're making the member contribution and you're getting the 5.8% back. The key distinction is that that applies to active employees. Because the language, that condition precedent language, that specifically references employees. Duty disability retirees are not employees. They're retirees. And so that word pensionable carries the day in their favor in terms of incorporating the 5.8% into their DDR pension benefits.
I have a hard time understanding. Justice Bradley, do you have anything you want to follow up on? I have a hard time understanding what work pensionable and base building do here. It strikes me that that is a little bit of begging the question, and I want you to tell me that I'm wrong here if you think I am. But the argument on the other side is that it is a contingent 5.8%, and they can't pay, therefore they don't get it. So to me there's – obviously if they get it, it's base building and pensionable. But I'm trying to understand why the word pensionable for, you know, particularly as it applies to active employees who are making that payment in base building, does any work here. It feels like it's irrelevant to the textual analysis for purposes of the retirees that we're dealing with here.
So as Attorney McGillis noted, when you're working for the city of Milwaukee as a firefighter, like your pension benefits, that is – you know, that's like the pot of gold at the end of your career. And so while they're working, they're accumulating pension benefits. And that's why these contracts are important, because each time there is a increase in their salary that's negotiated between the city, that goes to their base salary that's in the salary grid. And their wages are going to be used to calculate the normal service retirement. And in turn, it's going to be used based on how we calculate 75% of current annual salary. If in the unfortunate event they become disabled in the line of work, their duty disability retirement benefits as well. And that's why, from our perspective, that the parties have put that in there for a reason. And it's our position that plainly applies to protect the pension benefits of those who receive the 5.8%. And I believe the city's interpretation is troubling because it really makes that language irrelevant when clearly the parties put that there for a reason, and it was to protect the pension benefits for active employees once they become retirees.
I'm not following. I mean, an employee who gets the 5.8% because they're contributing, it would be base building and pensionable. I mean, it clearly has application. I guess I'm not understanding your argument.
Well, to say it's pensionable, I mean, it needs to be applied to their pension benefits. And so it's being applied for the city to the normal service retirement, but it must also be applied based on the definition of pensionable to duty disability. To do otherwise undercuts the meaning of pensionable while we're looking at the context of this contract and the benefits afforded under the Milwaukee City Charter.
Thank you.
And my time is up. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Assistant City Attorney Patrick McLean, and today I have the privilege of representing the City of Milwaukee and the City of Milwaukee Employees Retirement System. The city is asking this court to do two things. The first is to affirm the Court of Appeals decision, which decided this case based exclusively on the plain language of the contract at issue. And the second is to decline to exercise this court's discretion to hear new pension law arguments raised for the first time on this appeal. Before I get into the text of the agreement, which is where I want to spend most of my time today, I do want to address a couple of the questions that the justices asked to my colleagues a moment ago.
Can you explain to me why this previous benefit stopped and when vis-a-vis the contract? Was it before or after?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, was it deemed to be a ministerial duty to just include this?
That's exactly the point I'm about to hit, Your Honor.
And when did it change versus the negotiation of this contract? city attorney's letter?
The NPSO, so I think part of the confusion with the stipulation of fact is stemming from the fact that there were two different agreements at issue before both the trial court and the Court of Appeals, and here there's really only one agreement. It's the Local 215 agreement. The MPSO agreement had different language, materially different language, in that it did not have the four-sentence pension offset provision in it. It did not spell out...
I understand that. I get that. Maybe I'm not artfully asking my question. Do you agree that the city attorney drafted and sent a letter telling them not to do this anymore?
Yes, Your Honor. And
did that happen before or after this contract and this language that issue?
To answer your question, Your Honor, that happened before the Local 215 contract was implemented, but after the MPSO agreement had settled. And so that's why there's some confusion. When the ERS first got the MPSO agreement and there was no conditional language, it only had a salary grid, they implemented it as the Court of Appeals interpreted it, that as long as you were hired prior to October 3rd, 2011, you got the 5.8%, because there was no other language other than that phrase, pension offset payment, in that contract to say that there were any other circumstances where you wouldn't get it. The confusion and where ERS sought the consultation from the city attorney's office was that when the Local 215 agreement settled, it now had this provision that said there are circumstances under which individuals will stop receiving the 5.8% increase. In other words, there are circumstances where the number listed in the salary grid for a fireman hired before October 3rd, 2011 will not be the correct salary. And I'm going to cover that a little later in my argument, but the key takeaway is what the pension offset provision does, its core intent is to say, if you do not make the 7% member contribution, you do not receive the 5.8% increase. And so what that provision is doing is it's making clear that there are circumstances under which a fireman hired prior to October 3rd, 2011 will not be eligible for the numerical value in the salary grid. They will instead be eligible for a value that is 5.8% less than that value articulated in the grid.
And so the people who gave the most, right? They're disabled because of their profession and occupation as a firefighter, will receive less than others who aren't. That's what they negotiated, and that's what they planned on with this agreement.
No, Your Honor. If you look at the overall intent of the 5.8% pension offset provision, it says that the 5.8%, the 5.8% is clearly given in exchange for the 7%. There's no rational way to read the contract that doesn't link those two together. And I'll get into the explicit language here in a minute. But for a fireman in active service who's receiving the 5.8%, they're also paying a 7% contribution towards the pension plan. So at the end of the day, and all of that happens automatically. So their take-home pay is 5.8% higher, but then reduced by 7% for the member contribution. And that was the whole intent of this scheme, was that, and to back up even further, prior to the settling of this contract, the city picked up all member contributions for protective service employees, both policemen and firemen. Because of Act 10, the city was no longer allowed to do that, and firemen had to begin paying the 7% member contribution out of their own pocket. So what was negotiated in this agreement was, We don't want you paying that 7%, just taking that right on the nose. We want to give you a bit of an offset, we want to pay for a little bit of that. So they put a 5.8% increase back into the contract. And again, I don't think you can get around the express language. The clear intent is that the 5.8% increase is only intended to be included in salary for individuals who are making a 7% member contribution.
But that was not what was done with police supervisors. Correct.
That's correct, Your Honor, because and we did not appeal the Court of Appeals decision to that effect, and it's because, it's a material distinction, they're missing that four-sentence paragraph that the city refers to as the pension offset provision that clearly articulates in plain language that even if you have been receiving the 5.8% increase, if you stop making the 7% member contribution, the 5.8% also stops.
Counsel, I have no doubt that that's probably what the city intended, but I'm not sure that that is what is written into the CBA, and here's why. So the Milwaukee City Charter guarantees firemen who are who become disabled in the line of duty, guarantees them a payment equal to 75% of the current annual salary for the position held at the time of the injury. And it seems the parties agree that current annual salary for purposes of the CBA means the base salary. Is that right?
I would agree with that, Your Honor, with an important caveat, which is that the city has always treated Article 10 as a whole as establishing base salary. It's just that in all years prior, and maybe this answers your question, Chief Justice, I think it just congealed in my mind. In all prior collective bargaining agreements before the 2013 to 2016 agreement, there were no conditional components of salary. So the number in the grid was the number in all instances. This is the first time a collective bargaining agreement contained a contingent component of salary, and that's why it developed in this way.
What I'm getting at is that in Article 10, and hopefully I'm looking at the right table, C1, the biweekly base salary paid to employees shall be as follows, and then it lists, depending on the position and the step, a particular amount, and that amount includes the 5.8%, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So it seems like the city charter is guaranteeing that amount that's written into the CBA. I understand your argument that a subsequent paragraph says the pension offset payment will be made as long as the employee makes the member contributions, and of course everybody concedes that the disabled firemen are not making those contributions, but when I'm trying to put the city charter and the CBA together, and in your briefing you say that the CBA is intended to provide the firemen, the disabled firemen, well, at least 75%, in some instances 90% of what the working firemen are obtaining. So in other words, it's a wage replacement. So why wouldn't it include the 5.8%? Because, again, the city charter says that current annual salary, and you agree that it's the base salary listed, includes that 5.8%.
I think I can answer your question best with an example. If you had a fireman in active service who was hired prior to October 3rd, 2011, who did not make the 7% contribution, their salary would not be the salary listed in the salary grid.
I thought everyone made the 7%.
They do, Your Honor, and that goes to one of our extrinsic evidence arguments in this case, is that the only category of employees that this language can possibly apply to is duty disability recipients. But if you look at the point I'm striking at is that if you look at the plain language of the pension offset provision, it articulates two clear intentions. The first is that it links the receipt of the 5.8% increase with the prior payment of the 7% member contribution. But it goes beyond that. It specifies that that payment will continue to be made only as long as the 7% increase is also paid, and that it will no longer be paid if the 7% increase stops. So under the plain language of Article 10, and again, it's our contention, and the Court of Appeals found that it's Article 10 as a whole, including the pension offset provision, that when you read it together for a fireman hired prior to October 3rd, 2011, who does not make the 7% member contribution, the correct salary is not the salary in the grid. It is 5.8% less than that amount. And if that's not the case, then the pension offset provision has effectively no value.
It would have value if somebody I can't imagine a reason why, but somebody doesn't make the 7% contribution. Maybe somebody makes that, I mean, realistically they're probably not going to, but maybe somebody really needs the money so they're not going to make the 7% because it's not as if they get that fully replaced with the offset, right? There's still a 1.2% gap there. So it would cover that person, right?
I'm really glad you brought up that point, Your Honor, because there is no such category of individual. And I can't recall if this was fleshed out as in as much detail in the briefing before this court as it was before the Court of Appeals. But once you become a member, you cannot opt out. There's no provision within Chapter 36 of the Milwaukee City Charter that allows you to cease membership, unless, of course, you separate from service. The pension offset provision contemplates a scenario where someone is paying the 7% member contribution and stops. That cannot occur for somebody who is in active service because they do not have the discretion to stop being a member. So the language clearly cannot apply to an individual who opts out of being a member because they would have to do it at the outset of their employment and they would have never made a 7% member contribution.
Well, if this paragraph then was intended to apply only to those receiving duty disability, why didn't it say that? It doesn't use that term at all. It only talks in terms of employees who don't make the contribution. So doesn't that make it really unclear? I mean, why have such an unclear contract when it would have been so easy to write it very clearly?
I laugh because I've been telling my wife, I really wish we had written it more clearly. It would have saved me a lot of trouble. But the fact of the matter is we have the contract that we have. And while we certainly any contract can all there, you can always word it more clearly. The fact of the matter is, the question before this court is the contract that was made, does it entitle duty disability retirees to include the 5.8% in their base salary, even though they don't make a 7% member contribution? And you cannot get to yes on that question, given the conditional language in the pension offset.
But I think we can if we give meaning to the city charter, which says that the duty disabled get the current annual salary. And you just said that there isn't anybody who doesn't make the 7% contribution. So everybody who's working gets that 5.8% offset payment. It's embedded in the base salary in the CBA. So I understand there's this paragraph that says that the pension offset payment's not going to be made to employees who don't continue to make the payment, but it never mentions duty disabled. And if duty disabled under the city charter are supposed to get at least 75% or 90% of what their active working firemen are getting, I don't see why they wouldn't get it. The duty disabled wouldn't get that amount.
I think you just highlighted the distinction, which is the overall intent of the agreement is that nobody who's not making the 7% increase can receive the 5.8% increase. And I hope maybe this will clarify it, because I think the distinction between normal service retirement and duty disability retirement has played an outsized issue in this case. That was an argument that the circuit court latched onto. Well, if it's pensionable, how can it be pensionable for normal service retirement benefits but not for duty disability? And the devil is in the details here, and it is admittedly a very arcane distinction. But if you look at the word pensionable as used in the collective bargaining agreement, it's undisputed that it's an undefined term. But as my colleague pointed out, Article 23 does define pension benefits as those benefits offered by Chapter 36 of the Milwaukee City Charter. Therefore, when the term pensionable is used, it's given meaning by reference to Chapter 36 of the Milwaukee City Charter, which I believe is the point you're making, Your Honor. And unfortunately, I don't think we have a case from this court that discusses the applicability of incorporated language from an ordinance, but there is a case in the record, and I know it's not binding on this court because it's a Court of Appeals case, but it really articulates this point quite well. That's Milwaukee Deputy Sheriff's Association v. County of Milwaukee, where the Court of Appeals interpreted a collective bargaining agreement within the context of a vacation accrual ordinance that was incorporated into the agreement. And so it gave meaning to the terms of the collective bargaining agreement in reference to that ordinance, which is precisely the situation we have here. And the reason, and when you look at Chapter 36, give meaning to the term pensionable, this is why it would be included in normal service retirement and not duty disability retirement. Normal service retirement is calculated on final average salary. And there's a sole consideration for what constitutes final average salary. It's determined at a fixed point in time. So when you retire from city service and you elect a normal service retirement option, the ERS will look at whatever salary you received in your last 12 months, whatever your base salary was. That is the single determiner for calculating final average salary. If you received it in the last 12 months of your service, you get it for your normal service retirement. Continuing eligibility is not a factor for normal service retirement benefits. So to apply that standard to this case, as long as a fireman received the 5.8% in his final year of service, his final 12 months of service, it would be included in his normal service retirement benefits. It doesn't matter if he pays the 7% after he retires, because that's not what the standard requires. When you look at duty disability retirement, it employs a different standard. And I think what Local 215 is attempting to do is they're attempting to equate the two. Because they were paying, they had previously paid the 7% member contribution and receiving the 5.8%, they continue to get it. But that's final average salary. That's not current annual salary. Current annual salary requires you to look at what the individual would currently be eligible for. And under the explicit terms, the explicit eligibility criteria, which state a continuing condition precedent to the 5.8% increase, duty disability retirees who obviously do not meet that eligibility criteria do not rate to have it included in their current annual salary.
But neither do the regular retirees, so why doesn't this condition apply to them?
For the reasons I just articulated, because normal service retirement only looks at what you actually received in your last 12 months of service. Current annual salary doesn't do that. It says, what would you rate presently under the terms of the collective bargaining agreement in effect at the time? And to go back to, I apologize, I don't remember who raised the point. I believe it was you, Your Honor, that this is a wage replacement benefit. And that's why current annual salary or duty disability, I should say, is pegged to current rates. So as salary goes up in new collective bargaining agreements, and again, this contract is from 2013 to 2016, wage rates have continued to increase since then. It gets folded in because we want to treat you the same as we would any other firefighter.
Well, but we're actually not, right? And that's because of the city charter. They don't get 100% of what active duty firemen are earning. They get 75 or 90%. So that undercuts the wage replacement a little bit. But if we take wage replacement argument to its logical conclusion, then the firemen should be getting, right, the same amount or 75% of the same amount that the active duty are receiving.
But that's not the case because the parties agree, and all courts who have considered this issue found that there is agreement that current annual salary means the base salary established by Article 10. And in Article 10, it says if you do not, there's simply no manifestation within Article 10 that suggests if you stop making the 7%, you can earn a base salary that includes the 5.8% increase. That's the plain language of the agreement. And I want to highlight
just to follow up on Justice Rebecca Bradley's questions, can you do that? The charter says 75% of the current annual salary. Can you have a multiple tier structures that apply only to people who have retired? And it sounds like you're saying that, you know, sort of there's a deliberate effort to reduce the salary of the DDR beneficiaries and only those people. Can you do that under the language of the charter?
I don't think it's the language of the charter that controls. I think it's the language of the collective bargaining agreement, and the answer to your question, Your Honor, is yes, because that's what the explicit language within the pension offset provision allows. And I want to reiterate the fact that firemen in active service, while they're getting the 5.8% increase, also have to pay out of their salary 7%. If we are going to give duty disability retirees allow them to have a base salary that includes the 5.8%, but not pay a corresponding 7% member contribution, they are effectively receiving a base salary that is higher than their counterparts in active service. And I guess I would just maybe phrase it in the reverse. There's no firefighter in active service who's allowed to receive the 5.8% increase without making the 7% member contribution.
But you said there earlier that there isn't, that fireman doesn't exist. Everybody makes the payment,
that's
the contribution.
Correct. That's correct, Your Honor. But the Article 10 of the collective bargaining agreement doesn't say you only lose the 5.8% if you don't pay the 7% for a specific reason. It says if you're not paying the 7% for any reason, you don't get the 5.8% increase. So it would be applicable to any individual. And in this instance, it's applicable to duty disability retirees.
Attorney McLean, can you address Attorney McGillis's argument with respect to the language that we have in front of us in the pension offset payment? Specifically, the language shall be base building and pensionable. So how is it base building and pensionable for these 21 individuals who have paid in? Therefore, it should be part of their base salary. So if you're saying that they don't receive it, how is that base building and pensionable?
So if you read the and this is where I think the circuit court fell into a trap. If you read the circuit court's opinion, it It basically just said exactly that. The 5.8% is base building and pensionable. It didn't articulate the full sentence, the full final sentence of the pension offset provision. And the preceding language to the base building and pensionable phrase is important. It says the to such eligible member shall be base building and pensionable. In other words,
but it doesn't. It says employee, right? It says the pension offset payment to the employee will continue to be made as long as the employee makes the member contribution. If the employee does not make the member contribution, the pension, the 5.8 pension offset payment will no longer be paid to the employee. So four times it uses the term employee, and the firefighters say they're not employees when they are getting the disability benefit.
That's correct, Your Honor. But if we were to accept that argument, they would be entitled to no pay. And that's because the collective bargaining agreement affords all salary to employees. That's just the way the collective bargaining agreement is worded. It says employees hired prior to October 3rd, 2011, this is their base pay. So if we were to seize on that language, it would effectively allow the city, not that the city would. I mean, it would be an absurd result. The city could say, well, you're not an employee. You're not entitled to any language or any salary under the collective bargaining agreement.
So what work are you saying to such eligible employee does? Obviously, they are on DDR now. They cannot pay. Are you saying that means they're not eligible because they're not paying in right now? That's your argument, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But how does that make any sense if they've already paid in, and in light of the fact that anyone on DDR can never be an eligible employee? So you're saying people who paid in, how is that? Again, I go back to base building and pensionable. How could it be base building and pensionable in that circumstance?
Because the final sentence references eligible employees, you have to read that language within the context of the three preceding sentences. And what the three preceding sentences say is you must make the 7% in order to get the 5.8%, and if you ever stop making the 7%, you no longer receive. Again, I want to highlight that language. No, that will no longer be paid. So what that language really means is it is base building as long as you continue making the 7% increase. If you don't make the 7% increase, it will no longer be paid to the employee. And I think that intent is important. It doesn't, the pension offset provision doesn't just state if you make the 7%, you get the 5.8%. It says you must continue making the 7%.
Your position is that these 21 individuals are in no different position because they became DDR. They could no longer make the payment in to offset it, and therefore it is no longer base building and pensionable for them. That's your argument?
That's correct, Your Honor. And again, I want to highlight the distinction that firemen in active service, I think looking at it in isolation doesn't do, I think, faithful service to the agreement. The clear intent here was to ensure that anybody making the 7% member contribution would have an offset, something to take away something from something else. And that's what the 5.8% increase was intended to do. And to get to the point about intent, because I think it's sort of related here, is that when you look at Chief Labor Negotiator Deborah Ford's testimony, what she said was there wasn't intent to include or exclude it from duty disability benefits. There was only an intent to create base salary. And whenever you create base salary, it's necessarily going to have an indirect effect on duty disability benefits because duty disability benefits are calculated based on base salary. And to just push back a little bit on what my colleague said, the key testimony from Ms. Ford was not the passage highlighted earlier. It was when she was asked what language in the agreement would possibly allow the 5.8% increase to be excluded from duty disability benefits, she said, it says you have to be making the 7% to get the 5.8%. I don't know how much clearer I can make it. And that's because that language establishes a clear condition precedent to continued receipt of the 5.8%.
Counsel, the thing that I'm trying to just make sense of this agreement is, am I understanding you correctly that the language here that employees hired prior to October 33rd, 2011 shall receive the pension offset payment. The pension offset payment to the employee shall continue to be made as long as the employee makes the member contribution. If the employee does not make the member contribution, it would no longer be paid to the employee. Well, am I hearing you right that there is no such employee who exists right now? That there is no employee who could conceivably fall into the category of people who will stop making payments?
In active service, I think that's correct, Your Honor.
So, but this is phrased in terms of people in active service. It seems really odd to me to have this contractual language be directly addressed to those in active service, and there isn't a single person to whom that would apply.
Your Honor, I think that goes back to the colloquy I was having with Justice Dallet, which is all salary under the collective bargaining agreement is paid to employees. That's just the way the collective bargaining agreement is drafted. Again, if we get hung up on the employee language, I think that's a slippery slope, where then we say, well, duty disability retirees aren't entitled to anything because they're not employees. Even the salary in the grids is afforded to employees.
But that would violate the city charter, which the CBA cannot do, right?
And for the same reason, it treats the 5.8% the same way. So we're effectively saying that we're going to treat the number in the grids favorably for duty disability, but we're not going to treat the pension offset provision as being applicable to base salary in the same way as the grids are. But that's not what the contract says.
Well, let's follow that through with these regular retirees. You're saying that they could have paid in the 5.8. They would have paid in the offset. They would have gotten the 5.8%. Let's say that's their last salary year. They then retire. They're no longer paying in the same way DDR is no longer paying in. So according to your logic, they shouldn't get the benefit of that.
No, Your Honor, because final average salary is a different standard than current annual salary. Continuing eligibility for a base salary is irrelevant under the final average salary standard. It looks solely to your last 12 months of service.
Well, I understand that those terms are different and those concepts are different, and I'm a state employee. I've been one my whole life, so I get how this works. But that's not what this paragraph says. So, you did not distinguish in this agreement between DDR and between those regular retirees. And your logic is, therefore, you no longer get it. Well, they're no longer paying it, and they're no longer getting it either. So I think that's a contradiction.
Well, I would respectfully disagree based on the language of Article 23, which incorporates Chapter 36. So I think that the word pensionable has to be used in reference to Chapter 36 and the standards therein. I think I'm almost out of time. I want to highlight just very briefly a quick point. The 5.8% salary increase was just one change of the collective bargaining agreement. Firemen hired prior to October 3rd, 2011 received other non-conditional pay increases each year for every covered year of that agreement. In 2013 and 2014, they received a 2% increase. In 2015, a 3% increase. And in 2016, a 4.25% increase. Because those pay raises were not conditional, they were given both to firemen in active service and to firemen receiving duty disability benefits. So I think that fact gets lost here, is that those raises were across the board non-conditional pay rates. That was intended to apply to everybody. The 5.8% increase is clearly only intended to be afforded to those individuals who are paying the 7% offset because it is an offset.
In the CBA, where are those other pay increases noted?
Your Honor, they can be found. The CBA is in the record in multiple different places, but I'll just cite you to Record 65 at page 20. And so for that reason, we ask this court to interpret the plain language of the collective bargaining agreement in the same way as did the circuit court. I didn't get to the APEX standards, but I guess I'll just make a final just assertion that I do not think that the pension law issue that was raised for the first time on appeal is sufficiently fleshed out before this court to merit a decision on those grounds. We haven't heard any argument on it, but I just wanted to highlight that and also to highlight the fact that in the instances where this court has essentially – I see my time has stopped. Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you mind addressing the employee issue? That is, you brought up, or maybe your friend, no, I'm sorry, one of you brought up.
Yes.
One of the.
I think it was me.
Okay. the whole issue about the employees, and when I asked Mr. McLean that, he said, well, if they're not employees, they wouldn't get paid at all. So could you address that, please?
Well, again, we're looking at the Milwaukee City Charter. So they retirees get retiree benefits, and that's where that interplay between the contract and the Milwaukee City Charter comes in. Article 10 is important because that establishes the base salary, which is the foundation for how we calculate the pension benefits, which in this case are due to disability retirement. So what that language is saying is, firefighters, while you're active, you're an employee, you make the payment and you get the you receive the 5.8%. Once you throughout that whole time, it's pensionable, and because it's pensionable, that carries over once an employee transitions to a duty disability retiree and they're receiving those retirement benefits. There can be a bonus. There can be a $2,000 bonus that they're going to get that's not defined as pensionable, and that wouldn't be included in the pension benefits.
Right. I thought one of your arguments was that in the language, in the grid, it talks about if the employee does not make the member contribution, or the pension offset to the employee will continue to be made as long as the employee makes the member contribution. It goes
correct.
On. I thought your argument was that someone on DDR is not an employee.
Correct. And so that argument, to the extent that language, the condition precedent that we're talking about, that applies to the employees. And so, again, if there are some circumstances, whether there's changes to ordinances or whatnot, and an employee stops making it, they wouldn't receive the 5.8. But pensionable inherently applies to pension benefits. Retirees receive pension benefits. They're just built up based on the base salary the active receive. And in this case, because current annual salary is not defined based on past practice and the only like pragmatic way to do this, we look at the base salary, which is outlined in Article 10. And I do want to respond to the city's point that, well, these people, these disabled firefighters are going to get a higher salary than the actives. That's inherently not true. First, I mean, they're all disabled, and they are receiving 75% of their salary. There are some tax benefits, but bottom line, this is not some windfall to these disabled firefighters. They were hired prior to October 3rd, 2011. They made the payments. That payment was undisputedly incorporated into their base salary. It was used for everything else, payments, benefits, et cetera, except based on the city attorney's letter, DDR. And so, again, this is not some windfall. They met the requirements, and the pensionable nature should carry over to the DDR benefits as well.
Did the employees who are spoken to in paragraph 14 of the stipulation of fact, are those employees inclusive of the police supervisors, or are they just the firefighters?
I do not have, I apologize, the stipulated facts in front of me, but generally the stipulated facts was entered into between the attorneys for Local 215
right.
and the City of Milwaukee. So those stipulated facts, while there is some overlap with regards to how we got to this position, that should... And I cannot speak to whether that applies, but it does obviously apply to Local 215 retirees.
Yeah, I can see that, you know, it was signed by the attorney for the firefighters, and there's no signing of the attorney for the police supervisors. That doesn't mean it couldn't.
Yeah, it very well may. I cannot say for certain. I apologize.
Okay, that's all right.
And I do want to make one note with regards to the bargaining history, because I think there was some question about that. Duty disability benefits were bargained over during the course of this contract. There was a change, and it's outlined in the stipulated facts with regards to the procedure. And so the parties did touch upon that, but there was never any inference that the 5.8% was going to be excluded. And if the burden is on the city to change the past practice, otherwise we stick to the status quo under the principles of labor law and past practice. So I'm happy to answer any further questions, but I believe I've touched upon all our primary points.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for an oral argument. The court is adjourned. Drive home safely. I hear there are some weather conditions out there that mean you should be extra cautious driving back to Milwaukee.